Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. If you love digging into the week's political headlines, subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our reporters take you behind the scenes of some of the biggest stories from the campaign trail to the halls of Congress. Just for our Inside the Hive listeners, save 15% on a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair with promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off 1 year of all you can read, watch, and hear.
Nick, how are you?
Very good. Thanks,
man. Should we get straight to the intro?
Let's do it.
All right. Welcome to Inside the Hive. You want to do it?
Welcome to Inside the Hive. I'm Nick Adler, and you're Nick Bilton.
That is correct. So I'm gonna start off by introducing you very, very quickly, and then we'll jump into some topics that I've been thinking a lot about lately. Nick, you've worked with Snoop Dogg for how many years?
Almost a decade.
A decade with Snoop. You must be very high right now. What else do you do with Snoop?
Well, so I am the SVP at the Cashmere Agency, and I work with brands, celebrities, talent, influencers, and work on their social messaging and their content.
And with Snoop, you just get high with him?
Funny enough, I don't smoke, but yeah.
We'll get to that later.
It's kind of like don't get high on your own supply. So no, with Snoop, I've done mostly branding endorsement and also have sort of invested side by side with him, helped look at deals and mostly in the tech space, some consumer products. And we've done, a lot of fun stuff over the years.
All right. So I have a question that has been on my mind for quite a while, which is we live in a culture now, I'm just going to jump straight into it, where it's a celebrity culture, where pretty much anyone in America is idolized because they are a celebrity. And the guy sitting in the White House right now, Donald Trump, is not there because he has some amazing business prowess. He's there because he's a celebrity. And you look around, you look at the fact that, what were you saying? Kylie Jenner now has a filter on Instagram or something like that?
Yeah, on my way over here, I saw on Instagram there was a little blue check mark at the lower right corner. I clicked on it and there was a filter for Kylie Jenner you could put her lips on your face. It's just amazing to have that global platform and to sell your own product to however billion plus people.
A billion plus people now are putting their lips on Kylie Jenner's lips on their face. So you've also worked with a lot of celebrities, and you've worked with Snoop for all these years. And I wonder, when I look at the world that we live in, and it has transformed while we have been here on this planet. This is not something that happened 70 years ago. This is like the last couple of decades, right?
In the last like 7 minutes.
Yeah, maybe 7 minutes. Yeah. But I'm saying like the celebrity culture. Do you look at it and think, as you work with these people, do you think like, wow, this is really fucked up? This is not the world we should be living in?
I try to look at it from a little bit more of an optimistic approach, but I think I can't help but see things that are happening on social media and just in the political landscape right now and be like, oh, well, there's been some huge mistakes that have been made. So,
yeah.
So the answer is yes. I think that there is some upsides to this access and to this distribution that we've created.
You're talking about social media in general?
Social media, yeah. But I think, no doubt. I mean, celeb culture, influencer culture, it's moving so fast right now, and it's going in many bad, bad places. So yes.
So is there someone who works with some of these people? I mean, I look at Logan Paul, for example, I think to myself, like, first of all, he just seems like a total tool. But putting that aside, like, what's more depressing, because there's lots of people that are jerks in the world, what's more depressing is that he has such influence over millions of kids, and he thinks that the things he does he think that the things he's doing are okay? I mean,
undoubtedly
he thinks that they're fine.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. And so does someone have a responsibility to like lob him over the head and say, hey, you're not putting society in a better place, or am I just the asshole that I care?
A little bit of both. So I mean I don't think there is any kind of roadblocks right now. I don't think there is anybody to police that or patrol that. I don't think there should be. Logan Paul, as crazy as it is, I mean, realistically, the guy could become president one day.
Logan Paul.
Yeah. I mean, there is a possibility. It's not a remote possibility. There's a possibility that in X number of years, like 10, more than that, 20 years, this guy could be the president of the United States. The guy, I'll give him, I will kind of talk a little bit about him, because I think ultimately there is something to this person.
Okay, like well, him or what not, is it?
I don't know, there's something that is engaging and captivating, goofy, and relentless. One thing I've learned from Snoop and Beyond is that to be successful on these platforms is not a fluke. These guys are machines. They work so hard. Now, they don't care who they offend. They don't care if people like them or not, which is the kind of the flip side of it. But they are amassing massive audience, and they're essentially unstoppable. So they do something so ridiculous, but it doesn't even destroy them.
Yeah, no,
it doesn't even
Logan
destroy
Paul
them.
Did the most ridiculous thing I've seen in a long time, and didn't destroy him,
and he's on his way. You know, he's on his way back. I'm sure some of these people clearly are messed up, so they're going to do it again, and I hope eventually sabotage themselves. But look at, I mean, it's worked well for the president.
But it's worked well for the president, but it's worked at the expense of democracy, right? I mean, he uses this. It's interesting. I mean, when I was talking to actually my old editor at the New York Times this morning, and we were emailing back and forth, because in 2012 I wrote an article that said Apple would be the first $1 trillion company.
It just happened.
And it just happened. I was super late.
Like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. For people listening tomorrow or on Friday, it'll have happened yesterday. But I remember writing this article, and I spoke to all these analysts, and they predicted between 2013 and 2015. And I emailed my editor. I said, we were right. We were just off by 5 years or 4 years. And he wrote back. He said, we were actually right about a lot of stuff, because I wrote back then in 2012 about 3D printed guns, and we saw that happen this week. I said, but we were wrong about one major thing, which was social media. Back then, I used to say social media is the greatest thing that's ever happened to society. It's going to fix all the world's ills and this, that, and the other. And I actually truly do believe that it is probably one of the worst things to happen to society when I look at it today.
It's the greatest thing for narcissism, but the worst thing for society. Yeah, I agree with that.
But should we be... As someone who invests in these companies and also, you know, uses them with Snoop on the platform, as platforms, should we be doing something? Should we be pressing these companies to not allow? or am I just a old pessimistic lunatic?
I mean, should we? I don't know if we should. I think that it'd be nice if we could evolve to a place where there's proper ethics and proper ways to use these platforms, but I don't think we have the tools to police them, and I don't think we ultimately want to police them, because, you know, then we're starting to sort of control people's, you know, rights and stuff like that. But we've given a lot of people a platform, a lot of big assholes a platform, and they're not doing any good for culture, society. On the flip side, on the other side of it, we've given people without a voice a voice. Like there's kids or you know, creators or artists or politicians living in small towns in places where you didn't have access to a voice, and now you do. You know, there's some with terrible voice with audience now, but there's some, you know, who gives them this democracy, this the freedom to like create an audience, a niche audience. Like, that's one part of this whole thing that I think is amazing, is how specific is the new broad, how niche audiences or people with really specific tastes have now, you know, they have their own audience. That's the upside I will give to certain assets of this social media influence thing.
So are influencers, do you think that they're a net positive for entertainment and society, or are they, is it kind of a bit of, as with everything, a little bit of both?
I 100% a little bit of both. I mean, look, I have little kids, right? So do you. I worry about the world they're growing up in, and the influence and the narcissism and the just the obsession and the addiction. But I also do appreciate the ability for people to have an audience and for people to be able to create art across these platforms and to spread positive messages. Not all bad. There's a lot, the bad stuff, and you know this better than anybody, right? Being a journalist, but the negative stuff gets clicks. The clickbait, the stories, the condescension, the attack, like that is what people want to follow on Twitter. That the beefs on Instagram, I mean, that obviously gets more views. But there's people who are using these platforms to create an audience. And I think that's good. And frankly, like I fall into it. I mean, I think like I realize now, if you don't have an audience, if you don't have a group of people that follow it, then you don't have as much power as other people. That power is a big thing. Trump, love the guy or hate the guy, has massive power because this audience, fake or not, it's still a massive audience.
Yeah, I totally see what you're saying. I just wish that the audience is, I wish that the audience and the power would fall into less douchey hands.
The powers of good.
Yeah, into the powers of good. All right, so just switching gears a little bit, and I want to get to Snoop Dogg and some of your investments in a little bit, because I know you've got some fascinating stories. But you and I were talking this weekend about, you had a really good point about how the disruptors that have disrupted all these companies have just become better, shittier versions of the things they disrupted. Tell me that thought.
Yeah. So I think the kind of idea that I've been playing with is like, you know, what's new is essentially becoming old again. It's like this idea that, you know, in 2010, 2011, everybody was changing the world. And these guys, I think a lot of them still believe they're changing the world. And now
talking we're, like the Ubers and the Airbnbs.
I'm saying sort of, disruptive technology companies, Silicon Valley, LA, New York, wherever these hubs of disruption are, where there's these groups of people who are running around saying like, oh, we're not here for the money. We're here to change the world. And I think that was a great, compelling story for a long time. I think people believe that. And now we're
but
caught
it was,
up.
But it was bullshit though, right?
I think it was bullshit, but certain people did believe it until ultimately, you know, big money came into the industry and you have to earn. And now we're in a place where they're judged by public markets. You know, this is a big change. So, you know, these companies like Uber and Airbnb, right? They were amazing when they first launched. And I remember, you know, you press the button and there's your black car and everyone's like incredible. Everything's clean and they're
you go to the Airbnb and it's like this is amazing.
It's pristine. Yeah. And then, you know, it was cheaper too. Like, you know, it was amazing. Like, you're undercutting taxis. And then, have you taken an UberX lately?
Oh, it's like you get in and it's like,
oh, it's the dregs, man.
Yeah.
It is like unbelievable that.
It reminds me of being in a taxi.
Well, actually, I was in an UberX coming back from the airport the other day. And I was like, man, I should have taken a taxi. And I'm like, well, this is making a taxi feel like, you know, even if the guy's having it on his phone, like, the economics of it, and they've made it so cheap, and I respect that. But on the flip side of it, like, one day you're riding in an UberX, another day you're riding in an UberX, the next day you're going, oh, I'm just going to use the Uber Select, which is twice as much money, essentially, what was initially the UberX. And I get that eventually it's economies of scale. You get enough people, you can charge them more, and you know, you can dumb down the product. But I'm sitting here and I'm like, this is, we've gone backwards. So we're basically, they just replaced cabs with cabs.
They replaced cabs. They just, all they did was make it easier for us to get that cab.
You could press a button, and they've created it so that there's just one company that owns everything. It's sort of like a monopoly of economy. So there's that. And then, you know, the same with like we said, with an Airbnb. There's, you know, I'm sure the dating apps as well. Like, what's interesting there, though, is like, I think they're creating other niche products now. So, you know, there's the premium Uber X app or the premium Airbnb, the premium dating app that are spinning off these, and there's going to be a bunch of different versions of those.
So does that mean that these companies that, you know, Airbnb and Uber both on the verge of going public in the next X number of months, years, whatever, does that mean that that because they've become shittier products of the version that they were trying to, or equally as bad product of the thing they were trying to break, that they could be disrupted by someone else quite quickly, and from an investment standpoint, that's like, uh-oh.
I think it's hard. I mean, yes, I think that every product could ultimately be disrupted by a better product and one that catches critical mass through whether it's social media, word of mouth, whatever. But in this landscape, they have so much control, and I think it's getting harder and harder and harder. And there's also so much distraction. I think it used to be, and that's not that long ago, there was a few new companies doing a few new things. And now, you know, you're being inundated and you're being marketed to with so many different things. It's hard to attach yourself to anything. So you're going to hold on to these few products until something really, you know, until something really changes.
You're listening to Inside the Hive with Nick Bilton.
So you have invested in quite a lot of companies with Snoop Dogg. How did Snoop end up becoming, I mean, he came from Compton to being a rapper to
Long Beach. Get it together, buddy.
To being an investor and, like, you know, doing like PowerPoint keynotes at like events, tech events and conferences. How did that happen?
That happened because of number one, we wanted to learn. We saw our peers were doing stuff in technology.
Who were the peers back then?
I mean, peers, people in the entertainment space. I mean, Ashton Kutcher was obviously early, and I think he was making incredibly smart decisions and using his power to promote some of these products early. So I think, you know, for us, I personally I think I'm an early adopter. I like to play with technology. I like to look at tech. And just, you know, when Twitter was, I think, in its sort of early stages, I'm gonna say 2008, maybe 2007.
Seven was when it was, yeah.
And I remember going on it, and I wasn't managing Snoop on his social media. I wasn't doing any of those things. I was just using, like, kind of seeing what these products are. And I said to a friend of mine, I was like, am I an idiot not to understand Twitter? And he was like, well, you'd be foolish not to accept it, but you don't have to use it. And I remember thinking, okay, wait, so this is, I gotta pay attention. So I did. And I started to, like, you know, work with colleagues of mine at Cashmere. And we started to, like, you know, use these platforms.
And Cashmere is what, Snoop's branding agency?
No. Cashmere is a social media marketing company. We focus.
But you're in Snoop. You're in the office with Snoop, right? It's like a part of.
No. Yeah. So, I mean, Snoop has his own, you know, his own place of work. He is a multifaceted talent. I worked with his manager Ted Chung for many years on the management side, where I focused specifically on branding and endorsement pre-social media. And then as social was developing, that was a natural extension of that. So exploring Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all these things just to see how they could extend his brand and we could do marketing deals across his media platform. And that inevitably then led me to meeting investors, angel investors, entrepreneurs, private equity, things I didn't know anything about pre this job. I didn't have a business school education. I didn't know, finance was like so foreign to me.
So back then, 2007, is Snoop more famous now because of social media and things like that? Or was he as famous back then?
100%. Well, I mean,
100% more famous now?
I think there's more extensions of his brand. He's famous. He's globally famous. Yeah. He's done that with or without social, but he has so much extension to touch and talk to people on a daily basis that I think that's where it's really helped.
So you start using Snoop and you guys start investing in these companies and you came up with a strategy, right, where you were like, we can help these companies kind of grow and maybe get like a little cut of it, but that didn't work out so well with Instagram. Tell that story about what happened with Instagram.
It's not that it didn't work out. It was I didn't know. So I think this is going back to the early phase. So I was an early adopter of products, and I happened to come across Instagram when it was probably a few hundred thousand users. I mean, that's how early it was. And I remember going on it, and I remember kind of seeing some friends of mine talking about it on Twitter, and I was like, let me try it out. And I remember using it and being like, oh, this is cool. But it was such a simple product then. It was like a few filters and you post them and you can make yourself look cool, right? Or you can make your food look good, or you could take a photo of a rock, right? Which is kind of essentially what I was doing. I remember taking photos of like
rocks.
Yeah. And so then I tried to figure out who was behind this company, and I don't even think at that point there was really, like, LinkedIn was, I don't even know how far it had evolved at that point. And I went, I searched online, and I eventually ended up on Quora, which was kind of the, I think, tech talking spot, people where people could, you know, pontificate. And I found the founder there.
Kevin Systrom.
And I emailed him, and he emailed me back. And he was like, I could tell he was excited. He was like, this is really,
Snoop Dogg's cool.
So I don't even think it was about getting on the platform. I was just like, hey, I like what you're doing. I'm going to be up in San Francisco. So I flew up to the Bay with my colleague, Ryan Ford. And we did a couple of meetings that day, and we went to, South Park.
It's the old Twitter offices.
Yeah. I went to his office, and
it was tiny, like smaller than this room. Yeah.
Yeah. It was about the size of this room.
Yeah.
And this room, I don't know, for context, is about how big?
It's small.
Yeah. So we're in the room. I think there was like maybe four or five guys in there. And he's, you know, he said, he introduced us real quick, and then we walked down the street to a coffee shop. While we were in that coffee shop, we were he was talking about the product. And, at that time, I had met him since then. At that time, it was just a product that he was excited to do things with, that there was an audience. I didn't even know you could invest in companies at that point. So that's really what it comes down to. I had no idea that, you know, you could get equity, and it just was.
But I don't think, actually, in your defense, I don't think back then people were doing the equity for play. I don't think that existed.
It was happening in consumer products and things like that. You know, you'd seen Snoop, 50 Cent and Vitamin Water. So there were things going on, but it wasn't as obvious, right? It wasn't like a must do. So we're in this meeting with him, and we're just kind of hanging out, and in there, you know, we liked him. We're like, oh, let's throw up a photo, and we did
of Snoop on Snoop's account.
Yeah, and it was of Snoop holding a now defunct beverage.
What beverage was it?
It was called Blast by Colt 45.
Got it.
And then we hung out with the guy for a little bit. We shook hands. We left. I remember because we went to a meeting at Zynga after. Like, you can tell what kind of companies were happening at that point.
You can see what era of time you were in.
Yeah. And we were sitting down with the biz dev guy over there, and he basically, I think it's about an hour and a half later, he basically was like, oh, by the way, that's a great article on Snoop and TechCrunch. And we were like, what? Huh?
Wait, this is an hour and a half after you left?
Yeah, maybe 2 hours later. Yeah. And the article's still out there.
Yeah.
You can search it and find it. It was written by M.G. Siegler. Who's now a venture capitalist, right?
Yep.
And I went on there, and I basically read his article, and I was like, whoa. Like, and I remember it was like, essentially, Instagram becomes official.
Huh.
So, I mean, it's really like, this is celebrity user number one. I think there had been a couple other people on there, but he was really.
Well, I was already on there.
Yeah, so. You were on there. So, you know, in that meeting, and I think, you know, in the earlier part of it, we had definitely discussed. He's like, you know, there's more we could do together, and let's stay in touch, and all that kind of stuff. And so we did that, and then we, you know, it was cool. We went back to LA. We were proud of the sort of attention that we had gotten. But then all of a sudden, you know, I realized, you know, about a year and a half later, I think to that day, they sold for a billion.
Yeah.
And there were some congratulatory emails, and I was like, well, I don't know about that, you know? So, you know, I shot those guys an email. I had then followed up with the founder since then and had a coffee or two. And I remember there was a clear change in their approach. It was kind of funny because, you know, in the initial meeting, it was like, yeah, we want to, you know, this product, we want to do great stuff. We can do product integrations. And then the next time I saw them, like, it was post Facebook, and I was like, no, we're just the pipes of the internet. and I remember it took me like 10 minutes to figure that out. I was like, what does that mean? You're the pipes of the internet. Now it's like, everybody's like, we're the pipes. But at the time, I was like, you're the pipe. Yeah, we just want to be an open platform. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I kind of like, I went back a little bit shell shocked, but,
So after that happened, did you start coming up with ideas to say, okay, we won't sign up with your service unless we get something out of it?
No. But I did start to be proactive in how I reached out to companies to say, hey, I like what you're doing. Let's meet up. Let's talk. Let's figure out ways that we can collaborate together. If a product's good, I mean, that's, I think, the number one thing that I would say to this audience or to any creator or entrepreneurs out there. Like, if a product's good, a product's good, and people will use that product, whether you pay them or not. If the product's bad, yeah, there's been times where we've been like, we're not going to use this, no matter how much equity you give us. This is capital. Like, you need to pay for us to essentially endorse this product. On the flip side, when we've seen great companies been like, oh, well, you know, can we invest in this? Can we do something to create advisory equity? And that is, you know, how that's worked. And I think, yes, there's been the Snoop Dogg element of how we work with companies, but separate from that, like, you know, I've tried very hard with my colleagues to, like, you know, take the experience that we have and work with these companies and say, hey, we understand the multicultural millennial, like, let us invest. So we've built an interesting portfolio through just being honest with these companies.
So if you were to look forward to some of the things that you see kind of happening with, I mean, why doesn't Snoop have a podcast? Like, what are some of the things that you see as kind of the next platform that someone like Snoop Dogg would be kind of adopting?
Well, he does a lot. I mean, he does a lot. And he does it himself. So it's not necessarily like I'm myself or the team, we're the gatekeepers to the products. I think he is now at a place where he manages most of the social media himself.
Yeah. He tweets a lot.
Yeah. and he's found a very authentic voice, and you know it's him. It's hard to look at new tech now and say, I want to use that, I want to use this, because it's like, again, there's so much clutter, and we're down to like three or four basic social tools. There's other types of things that we're looking at now that could be helpful in other spaces. I think that is how I look. For me personally, when I'm looking at, you know, things now and looking at it from an investment standpoint or even from a marketing services standpoint, it's coming to me now through people that I trust and respect in this industry. Guys that I've created relationships with, whether they're people like, you know, friends of mine who are entrepreneurs or venture capitalists. And the funny thing now is, the irony now is that from going from a space where I didn't know much to now feeling I have a decent understanding of the space, and I think there was a smaller network of venture guys and angels out there. Now I feel like, especially in LA, you turn around, it's like being a film producer in the 90s. Like, everybody's like, oh, you have a venture fund.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, what? You have a fund? And then I realized, like, oh, the level of sophistication isn't even that deep, where, you know, you meet some people and you're like, there's incredible due diligence and you can tell them what you do and they don't say cliche things, where it's like, now I got to a point where I meet so many of these venture guys and they say the same thing. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, well, that's a...
Well, that was my next question, actually. So you when you look at these venture guys, I mean, look at the Bird scooters, for example, right? Mm-hmm. One day there was no scooters. The next day there were God knows how many, thousands and thousands everywhere. And then there was Lime, and then there was, you know, Uber's getting into scooters and Lyft and this, that, and the other. And I guess the question I have is, from an investment standpoint, do these investors just have no creativity whatsoever, and they see one tiny little glimpse of something that is going to work, and that's, they're like, oh, we've got to go for that? Or is it that they see one tiny glimpse of something and they're like, well, that's going to work, we're going for that?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter, but I do think that there's a lot of creativity out there, and there's a lot of people that are taking risks on different things, and sometimes things that I look at are just, I think it's absolutely silly. And I think, like, you know, there is a little bit more of like, what's the massive 100x upside to it, rather than, hey, here's a good company doing good things that our money could be helpful towards, that could get a, you know...
That's not what venture capitalists look at.
100x, yeah. It's the 100x. So I think in that, there's also this FOMO, right? It's the fear of missing out. Like, people missed Uber, right? People missed Lyft. People missed Instagram. So they don't want to miss out. So when the big firms go all in for hundreds of millions of dollars, and the great, big names go into things, then everybody wants to get on board. So I think it's essentially, I don't think it happens every day now, but I think Bird, which I think is a pretty interesting product.
Oh, I think it's a fascinating product.
You know, and I think there is some issues, but there's a lot of upside to it. And I think, like, everybody saw that. It's like, I need a piece of that. And these guys were able to leverage that super fast.
What's so fascinating about Bird, the scooters, is that, you know, I was early on every platform because it was my job. I was early on Twitter, on Instagram, on all these things. And using Uber, I remember when Uber only existed in San Francisco and it was only black cars. And I remember the first time I used it. And And there's a lot of times I use these things and I'm like, eh, that's not going to do anything. And I actually thought that with Twitter at first, so my radar is not 100% accurate. But then there are these moments where you use it and you're like, holy shit, this is going to change everything.
Yeah.
And there's been this kind of challenge with transportation in cities. They've always been trying to come up with ways. Remember the Segways? They were like, it's going to change everything.
Yeah,
and it didn't. And I think that I saw the scooters all over the place and I was like, eh, it's not going to do anything. And then I rode one the other day and I was like, oh, this is something that's going to change everything.
Yeah.
And I think that it's fascinating kind of to see how what's so interesting is how quickly it happened with this.
Yeah.
You know, as you were talking about with Instagram, it took a couple of years before Facebook was like, we're going to buy this company. And it wasn't even that big back then.
Yeah.
These scooters are just like that.
Yeah.
Is that an example of the fact that just from like the investment stuff that you look at, that things are speeding up even more? And aren't there consequences to that?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think that's one of the downsides to the, you know, I was using the scooters last week in Santa Monica and it was a Saturday and they were littered across the street and everything was dead. There was no battery left in anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was like, but on the, you know, there's so many different choices now. I just think the barrier of entry there was low enough that people could get in fast. Like you can go to China, buy a bunch of these scooters, get them on the street, plug in the technology, and now it's a race to really being innovative. Like I can only imagine where these if these companies really are looking at the space from an innovation standpoint, it's probably going to be amazing one day. If you go in, there's like a mini one person car, whatever the case is, and it really does kind of work within the Uber, or it goes the reverse way, like I said earlier, where you know you're just jumping on an electric sidewalk or whatever.
Yeah,
but but so I think in certain spaces that it still takes R&D and it still takes time, and sometimes we do neglect that. And another place is a lower barrier entry. And yeah, it can happen. There's six versions of everything, like everything that works, food on demand to like. There's happens.
Hundreds of versions.
Yeah,
of
and then it's the most money. It's the most marketing.
All right, so we have like a little bit of time left. I wanna ask someone. First, I want to come back to the beginning of this, and when I talked about celebrity culture and how I wonder if it's ruining the world or if it's just kind of par for the course that comes with media and technology. But when you do look at these platforms now as someone who's kind of helped bring attention to them, and you know Snoop uses them so much, do you kind of have any regrets? Like, do you, or is there part of you, of course part of you is your job and you want to get the people you represent out there and you want to invest in these companies, but is there part of you that thinks like we should be doing this differently?
Not really.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I don't have regrets in any of the work that we've done and how we've used the platform. I look at things and how people are using it, and I feel sad, and I like, I think it's unfortunate. But I've always looked at most of this global reach and this voice as being a great tool and something that you know we can use to build our media brand, build our sell products, share a voice, and do positive things. There is a downside to it, but I don't feel like anything we've done has contributed to that.
All right, so I want to hear a couple of Snoop Dogg stories.
Stories. So I think
What is it? Okay, here's a question I have. Snoop's. I've met him. He's a incredibly charismatic guy, no patience, it seems like. Correct me if I'm wrong. Kind of no bullshit. Like, I'm just like, this is, I'm
Snoop.
Knows
what he wants, yeah.
I know what I want. Often very high. What is it like? I mean, I go in the room with some of these people. I'm kind of nerdy, I'm not going to lie, you know. Like, but I go in the room with some of these people and I'm like, holy shit, you are a nerd. What is it like for Snoop when he meets some of these tech people?
We've had a lot of different meetings. I mean, I think this is actually an interesting point here, is that like we've had a lot of meetings at this point with people who are investors or the entrepreneurs, et cetera. And, you know, you learn how to not waste time and be effective with these. Like, it's rare that we'll have that meeting unless we really feel like there's an opportunity and a business play. But there's a kind of a feeling that happens sometimes when we walk in the room where I think there's a sense of like, oh, these rapper music industry guys, oh, they don't know anything. Like, there's a sense of like, I'm going to talk to you in a, it's not patronizing, but I'm just going to talk to you and I'm going to talk to you, I'm going to tell you how it works. And we just sit back, just very quiet, and listen to an incredible amount of things that they're just giving us. Huh. They come into the room and just give it to us because they feel like, you know, we might not have gone to Harvard or Yale or, you know, one of the Ivy Leagues and had, you know, business school training, right? But we have experience and crazy hard work. And incredible now to think about the portfolio we have. It's actually probably longer, deeper, and better than some of these other guys.
From the VC firms?
Yeah, from the VC firms and even from the entrepreneurs who a lot of times are really young.
Yeah.
And, you know, but like really like big egos and ambitious. And I respect that, but it also leads to this thing. So we kind of sit back and just let it happen and just let it wait to a point where I think they really feel like, oh, I've really, you know, really shown these guys. And then, boom, you know, hit them with the questions. And you realize, like, the level of sophistication, you know, especially like Snoop. I mean, this guy has been in the industry for over 20 years. Like, he's seen and done deals that people can only dream of. When he was, you know, globally famous at 20 years old, wow. Right? You know, like, big checks were coming, you know, when I was in junior high school, you know, so people forget that. And then you realize, oh, I'm sitting across from a really seasoned entrepreneur and a person who's done, you know, has a lot of experience in the industry. And I think then we leave and a lot of times we don't even expose ourselves and show them how much we actually know. And that comes through the deal process or ultimately how we can help at the end of the day. But it's kind of funny because that experience in that room is also what leads us to realize, like, it's not just about the deal. It's not just about the economics. It's about the person, the entrepreneur, the venture capitalist, the pizza man, the taco maker, whatever it is. It's like, is that person cool? Do they have work ethic? Are they in for the
ride? It's funny.
It
reminds me. So Mark Zuckerberg used to famously wear a hoodie every single to, you know, all over the place in flip-flops. And I remember speaking to someone who worked with him in his comms department. And they said to me, you know, everyone thinks the hoodie is just, you know, Mark is young and like wears a hoodie, but it's actually an investment strategy. When he goes into a room, all these super smart people that think they're way smarter than him look at him and think, oh, here's the dumb kid in the hoodie and the flip-flops and, you know, the same gray t-shirt. And it was his way of sizing up the room and letting them all kind of talk down to him and then being like, actually, this is the way it's going to work. It sounds like it's very similar.
Yeah, totally. I mean, everybody has their tools. And like, you know, a lot of people come in, especially people who have had success in this industry. They come in with big egos and they like to share a lot of information. And you can just sit back sometimes and be like, okay, well, just give it to me. I'll take it all.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes they realize and sometimes they just keep going and then they tell stories about the time they met you, you know?
This is Inside the Hive with Nick Bilton.
Hey, Nick, are you having trouble getting sleep at night?
Yeah, yes, I am. How did you know?
Well, it's funny because the fine people at Mattress Firm want to help you. Mattress Firm is here for you when you're looking for ways to improve your sleep, which you are obviously trying to do. They have these people here that at Mattress Firm, they are mattress experts. They are experts when it comes to your bed, to your headboards, to adjustable bases. They even do sheets. They also do bedroom decor if you and your wife are looking for some new bedroom decor. And they've got you covered literally and figuratively. Get it? Literally and figuratively?
Yeah. Oh, it makes sense.
So if you go to mattressfirm.com/podcast, you can save 10% on a mattress right now or any of the stuff that they have, putting in the code podcast10. That's PODCAST10. It's Mattress Firm offers you, if you're worried, because I know you're a business guy and you kind of think about these things, they offer you a 120-night sleep trial so you can rest assured that you will get the best mattress and the best sleep or you'll get your money back. And they also offer a 120-night low-price guarantee. so you know that you paid the perfect price for your mattress. They have 3,000 stores nationwide, so you can probably just walk to one after we're done with this podcast and go check them out. Do you remember what the code was and where to go? I'll tell you.
Yeah, I know. It was built in.
Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast. Save 10% with the code podcast10. That's P-O-D-C-A-S.
Podcast 10.
Zero.
Got it.
C-A-S-T. Podcast 10.
Do they headboard?
They do everything. They do the whole thing, Nick.
I love a good headboard.
Everything. You got it. Once again, mattressfirm.com. All right, give me a good Snoop Dogg story that's gonna be entertaining. You gotta have one. I mean, you've been with this guy for 10 years.
Well, I mean, look, I think we've done a lot of fun stuff. I mean, I think there's all different types.
Were you involved with the Trump thing when that happened?
No, that's not my thing. I think, look, at the end of the day, like, we were in South by Southwest recently. I think, you know, this is a big guy who's in the media right now. We're in South by Southwest recently. We were DJing a party for Sound Ventures. Uh-huh. And I think a great crowd was there. It was a mix of entrepreneurs, celebrities, investors, and, you know, just media people. And I look over and I see Elon Musk. And it's kind of, I think, I fell into that sort of celebrity moment where, you know, he's the big tech guy. And I was like, oh, this would be really cool to meet that guy. So kind of finagle my way, asked somebody, you know, who would help up at a range of events, said, could we connect with him? And, and it was like him, myself, and I was going to bring Snoop down, and we were going to do it immediately afterwards behind the DJ booth, and kind of get back there. I'm with him first.
With Elon.
Yeah. And so I'm at my core, I'm still a sales guy. So yeah. I'm like, okay, let me figure out how to hook this guy. How can I talk to him? How can I engage with him? And I start throwing out my best, you know, hey man, how's it going? What's going on? You know, and nothing. I'm just missing the dart. Like, he's like, you know, a lot of yes, uh-huh. No.
Yeah.
And like, I'm feeling the sense of like, oh, this is not working. And then, you know, I think Snoop walks up and I introduce him and a few other people. We all take a photo together, a photo, which by the way was great. You know, it was me and Snoop and,
Elon
and, Guy Osuri, but of course, when it went on Elon's page, I was cut.
Yeah, it was so funny. Everyone else posted the photo of the four of you guys, and Elon cut you out.
Yeah, which is fine. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't post the photo of myself either.
So wait, how was the interaction with Elon?
Well, so then, you know, Snoop walks up, Elon's there, and it was just a lot of missed signals. It was a moment, and it was, you know, an interesting and a fun moment. But I remember saying, hey, you know, we'd love to come by and visit.
You guys are right down the street.
Yeah, we'll come by. And he's like, and then he looked at me and said, okay, well, would you like me to connect you to somebody? And I was like, sure. Yeah. and I think if we'd been probably, you know, talking about Tesla or the sort of algorithm and stuff, it might have been an easier flow. But then so we did this whole thing, and then, you know, everybody smiled and Snoop was nice and whatever. And then the next day, after it had been posted on social media, Snoop called me and goes, hey, was that Rocket Man? I was like, yeah, that was the guy.
That was Rocket Man.
So, you know, these crazy kind of encounters that happen, but that was a fun moment. But I think another interesting story was, like, I think with us in Lyft, with me and you.
What was that?
You had been writing a piece on the car market, the driverless, the Ubers and the apps.
Yeah.
What do you call it? What is the
term? I don't know.
On demand.
Thank you.
Yeah. On demand. So the on demand economy, and you were writing about Lyft, and this was, this gotta be what, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
So Lyft was walking around with, they had the mustaches on the front of the car.
Oh yes, I remember the mustaches.
And so you said, hey, what do you think of Uber and Lyft? And I said, I don't really have an opinion. And you were like, well, you don't think it's nothing. And I'm like, well, I think the mustache is ridiculous. And you're like, well, that's great. Tell me more. And then, you know,
I was writing a I remember now. I was writing a story for the New York Times, and at the New York Times, you always have to have an expert quoted in the story.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you lived down the street from me at that point in time, and I was like, this column closes in like 20 minutes, Nick, like, and you gave me this great quote. Yeah.
Yeah, and so basically I said something like, I think they're ridiculous and they're silly and they should get rid of them and there's an opportunity to really do great marketing. And I didn't think much about it. And then I think you published the next day and you quoted me like I was like pretty central to the story where I was basically like, they look like a bozo.
Yeah.
And I kind of was like, uh-oh. I think it was my first experience where I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that. But I got an email. To their credit, I got an email from Lyft, from one of the founders, who was like, hey, I saw the article. I'd love to talk to you and get your perspective. And he called me, and we had a great conversation. He told me about what they were doing. And he gave us the opportunity to then get to know them, work with them on the marketing side, and ultimately invest in them. And
so Snoop Dogg owes me a big thank you.
What, Lyft? We all do. But I mean, it's a lesson where it was like, sometimes, you know, if you give it to them straight, then it opens up doors of opportunity as opposed to being like, you know, oh, yeah, it's the greatest thing in the world. You know, I was a little nervous about how that played out, but it ultimately played out good in the end. To this day, we're friends. And I will go back to that economy of, like, how old is the new and all that. I think, like, you know, all these sort of cars, it's the same thing where they've changed in terms of the thing. But ultimately, at the end of the day, those guys seem to have their head in the right place, and they're genuinely trying to do it.
I genuinely I believe that there are some good companies out there. Aaron Levy at Box, among them. You know,
also a funny guy,
a very funny guy, a great, very very very
great
funny
on
guy.
Twitter.
Yeah, really I good. For a long time believed that Aaron Levy had a ghost Twitter writer, but turns out I may be wrong. But like Lyft among them, and I think there are a few. Okay, so here's where we're going to close out. Speaking of being nice. I'm often very pessimistic on this show, and I want to give you the hat of you now have been anointed chief ethics officer, and I'm going to go through a couple of companies. I want you to tell me what you would do to make that company better.
Oh wow! And how, get some calls
and how it would be, how you could make, because I think that these companies are so bad because the people who run them don't put the effort forth to make them better. They're more concerned with how they're perceived on Wall Street and by the media and investors and so on, from a financial standpoint. All right, so you're now chief ethics officer at Twitter. What would you do?
Super underqualified.
Okay, but I still have assigned you the job because no one else wants it. What would you do to make Twitter a better place?
Oh, man, cut off the white supremacists.
Immediately. And what else?
I mean, I'd allow you to edit tweets, and I get why they don't. I'd allow you to edit tweets, but I'd also just like, I'd just show a little bit more of a moral compass. I know you, as a company, it's hard to do that, especially when your bread and butter is right-wing politicians.
Yeah.
But like, come on. Like, there's some really bad people saying really bad things, albeit on all sides of the spectrum, but like, figure out a way to expose them or to, you know, moderate them.
Okay, YouTube.
YouTube.
I mean, it's interesting. I think YouTube doesn't get enough attention for the bad shit on there.
Yeah.
And all the conspiracy theories and Alex Jones like stuff that goes way beyond that.
Yeah.
What would you do?
YouTube is, I mean, it's a beast. I mean, there's just so much content on a daily basis. I don't necessarily know, like, that one's a hard one for me because I think, like, I think it's an amazing product where everybody can put up content. There's so many hours of content, you can find anything. I mean, on a very simple level, I try to create a slightly better editorial process where I go on the company, I go on the page, or I go on YouTube, and I'm able to sort of navigate more seamlessly to, you know, content that does a little bit better job, like a Netflix or something.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, editing it and controlling it, I feel like you have to seek that out as a consumer. Whereas on Twitter, that just flows to you. Like, the bad stuff just flows to you. On YouTube, If you're seeking it, you have to go and you have to find it. So that's, to me, the difference there. And that's why I do find it harder to censor or moderate that platform.
Instagram? Do you think there's anything wrong with Instagram?
I mean, Instagram is just a monster. It's like incredible. Like, I go on airplanes and I watch.
It's everyone.
I mean, I fly a lot, and I think that airports are the most incredible place because it's people from all walks of life, right? So you get an airplane. It's the one place where everybody's squeezed together from, doesn't matter, like, ethnicity, financial status.
Well, there's another place, the DMV, but keep
right.
going.
Well, I try to avoid that. But everyone's on Instagram. And, like, the product is incredible. I'd like to see them go in a direction less sort of, you know, pure teeny bopper and really try to elevate the media platform. But I understand, you know, what they have to, that they have to please everybody. So that product is unbelievable. I mean, I think that how they did Instagram TV was a miss.
Yeah.
I think they could have done that in a better way. Creating better ways to see long form would be interesting for them.
I have an idea of how Instagram could make. I think that there are a lot of good sides to Instagram, and I think that there are also some bad sides to Instagram. But I think one thing that they could do is they could cut you off. I remember when you and I have a lot of friends and family that have actually quit Instagram lately because it's either all or nothing with the addiction level of it. And I think that I remember when the Wii came out. Remember the Nintendo Wii?
Yeah.
And you were playing the tennis thing and you're swinging your arms. And then there's this thing that pops up. And they've been like, you've been on here for 30 minutes. Maybe you should go outside and take a walk. Like, and I feel
well,
like...
Well, they've done that now.
Who?
Instagram.
With what?
If you go down far enough, it's like you're all caught up.
Well, they're doing that because they want you to come back in 5 minutes. I don't think they're doing that because they want to make the world a better place.
It's
a reverse psychology thing. But like, I don't know. I just think that there are so many things these companies could do that would be better from an ethics standpoint, and they just don't do them. But we'll see. All right, last final question. Over the past 10 years, I have come full circle on social media. There was a point, and you knew me at this point in time, when I was obsessed, and all I could do was talk about it, and all I could do was use it. And I haven't been on Instagram in, I don't know, a year. I just abandoned a couple 100,000 followers on there. I haven't opened Snapchat in 2 years. I barely use Twitter. I barely go to Facebook. And I have come full circle in the respect of I don't necessarily believe. I believe that there are a lot of technologies where they have good sides and they have bad sides. For example, driverless cars will be amazing because they will stop people from dying in car accidents, but they will also probably be used in very nefarious ways and will, you know, harm, you know, mom and pop stores and things like that. When it comes to social media, I do think there's a lot of good that's happened as a result, Black Lives Matter and things like that. But I also think that there is more bad that has happened. And I don't believe that those companies will be around in 20 years. Do you?
Do I believe that the companies like Instagram?
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, do you think that there will be companies, the products that we will use in 10, 20 years, do you think that they'll be around?
Some of them. I do. I believe that Facebook and Instagram will be around.
Twitter not so much?
I don't think so. But I think because of the acquisition model at Facebook, that they continue to buy the product that people want to use anyway. It's interesting, I was talking to my mom last week, right? And I was talking about how Facebook dropped 20% and, you know, I lost a decent part of my 401k. I was like, oh, that's a lot of money I lost in one day. But I'm still like, it'll come back. So we'll sit it out. And my mom was like, yeah, no, I remember IBM. And I was like, well, what do you mean? She's like, I remember when, you know, in the 80s, when all we ever bought was just IBM, IBM, IBM. And it was like, I don't know, maybe, what do you think it was? Maybe like $500-$600. And I think now it's $125 a share. And it's like, I could see the vision and the opportunity that they had with IBM at one point.
Yep.
And now it's a small player in a big orbit. So there's no doubt in my mind that there will be new things that
will overtake
these things. I do like I said earlier, think we're in a place now where less companies have more control, and they will fight hard to keep that control. So, you know, although I'd like to say there are the companies that don't innovate and aren't amazing, and, you know, some 20-year-old kid will disrupt it, but I think some of them, like Facebook and Instagram, will definitely be around.
Well, we will see. We'll have you back on the show then to find out.
10 years.
10 years. 20 years from now.
20 years. Let's do it.
Nick Adler, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Nick Bilton, thanks for having me.
Of course.
You're a real match.
Thanks to my guest,
Nick Adler, the hottest SoundCloud rapper in the game.
Okay. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes of Inside the Hive with who?
Slick Nick Bilton.
Slick Nick Bilton. You can find these on, come on, read this, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And
don't forget to leave a review while you're there. And follow me on Instagram, Nicky Ads.
Thanks. Don't follow him on Instagram. It's terrible. Thanks to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work. Thanks to my editors at Vanity Fair. And thanks, of course, to my sponsors, Vitamin Water and Mattress Firm. Please support them the same way you support this amazing podcast. I love Vitamin Water.
Yeah.
I really love Vitamin Water.
No, it's good stuff.
The Triple X one, the Dragon Fruit.
No, it's good stuff.
It's really good
50
stuff.
50 Cent, man.
And so is Matt. Yeah, I know. We talked about that earlier. All right, folks. I will see you all next week.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson.
Oh.
Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
From PRX.